Next, we come to an LOS asking us to describe factors that influence the level and volatility of yield spreads. We can think of the yield on an option-free corporate bond as the sum of the real risk-free interest rate, the expected inflation rate, a maturity premium, a liquidity premium, and a credit spread. All bond prices and yields are affected by changes in the first three of these components. The last two components are the yield spread. We can state that a yield spread is the sum of the liquidity premium and the credit spread. Yield spreads on corporate bonds are affected primarily by five interrelated factors: credit cycle, economic conditions, financial market performance, broker-dealer capital, and market demand and supply. Credit cycle. The market's perception of overall credit risk is cyclical. At the top of the credit cycle, the bond market perceives low credit risk and is generally bullish. Credit spreads narrow as the credit cycle improves. Credit spreads widen as the credit cycle deteriorates. Economic conditions. Credit spreads narrow as the economy strengthens and investors expect firms' credit metrics to improve. Conversely, credit spreads widen as the economy weakens. Financial market performance. Credit spreads narrow in strong performing markets overall, including the equity market. Credit spreads widen in weak performing markets. In steady performing markets with low volatility of returns, credit spreads also tend to narrow as investors reach for yield. Broker-dealer capital. Because most bonds trade over the counter, investors need broker-dealers to provide market-making capital for bond markets to function. Yield spreads are narrower when broker-dealers provide sufficient capital, but can widen when market-making capital becomes scarce. General market demand and supply. Credit spreads narrow in times of high demand for bonds. Credit spreads widen in times of low demand for bonds. Excess supply conditions, such as large issuance in a short period of time, can lead to widening spreads. Yield spreads on lower quality issues tend to be more volatile than spreads on higher quality issues. Our last LOS for this topic is to explain special considerations when evaluating the credit of high-yield, sovereign, and non-sovereign government debt issuers and issues. We will address each of these issuer classes, beginning with high yield. High yield or non-investment-grade corporate bonds are rated below Baa3 or BBB- by credit rating agencies. These bonds are also called junk bonds because of their higher perceived credit risk. Reasons for non-investment-grade ratings may include high leverage, unproven operating history, low or negative free cash flow, high sensitivity to business cycles, low confidence in management, unclear competitive advantages, large off-balance sheet liabilities, or industry in decline. Because high-yield bonds have higher default risk than investment-grade bonds, credit analysts must pay more attention to loss severity. Special considerations for high-yield bonds include their liquidity, financial projections, debt structure, corporate structure, and covenants. Liquidity or availability of cash is critical for high-yield issuers. High-yield issuers have limited access to additional borrowings, and available funds tend to be more expensive for high-yield issuers. Bad company-specific news and difficult financial market conditions can quickly dry up the liquidity of debt markets. Many high-yield issuers are privately owned and cannot access public equity markets for needed funds. Analysts focus on six sources of liquidity in order of reliability: balance sheet cash, working capital, operating cash flow, bank credit, equity issued, and sales of assets. For a high-yield issuer with few or unreliable sources of liquidity, significant amounts of debt coming due within a short time frame may indicate potential default. Running out of cash with no access to external financing to refinance or service existing debt is the primary reason why high-yield issuers default. For high-yield financial firms that are highly levered and depend on funding long-term assets with short-term liabilities, liquidity is critical. Projecting future earnings and cash flows, including stress scenarios and accounting for changes in capital expenditures and working capital, are important for revealing potential vulnerabilities to the inability to meet debt payments. High-yield issuers' capital structures often include different types of debt with several levels of seniority and hence varying levels of potential loss severity. Capital structures typically include secured bank debt, second lien debt, senior unsecured debt, subordinated debt, and preferred stock. Some of these, especially subordinated debt, may be convertible to common shares. A credit analyst will need to calculate leverage for each level of the debt structure when an issuer has multiple layers of debt with a variety of expected recovery rates. High-yield companies for which secured bank debt is a high proportion of the capital structure are said to be top-heavy and have less capacity to borrow from banks in financially stressful periods. Companies that have top-heavy capital structures are more likely to default and have lower recovery rates for unsecured debt issues. Many high-yield companies use a holding company structure. A parent company receives dividends from the earnings of subsidiaries as its primary source of operating income. Because of structural subordination, subsidiaries' dividends paid upstream to a parent company are subordinate to interest payments. These dividends can be insufficient to pay the debt obligations of the parent, thus reducing the recovery rate for debt holders of the parent company. Despite structural subordination, a parent company's credit rating may be superior to subsidiaries' ratings because the parent can benefit from having access to multiple cash flows from diverse subsidiaries. Some complex corporate structures have intermediate holding companies that carry their own debt and do not own 100% of their subsidiaries' stock. These companies are typically a result of mergers, acquisitions, or leveraged buyouts. Default of one subsidiary may not necessarily result in cross-default. Analysts need to scrutinize bonds, indentures, and other legal documents to fully understand the impact of complex corporate structures. To analyze these companies, analysts should calculate leverage ratios at each level of debt issuance and on a consolidated basis. Important covenants for high-yield debt include change of control put. This covenant gives debt holders the right to require the issuer to buy back debt, typically for a par value or a value slightly above par in the event of an acquisition. For investment-grade bonds, a change of control put typically applies only if the acquisition of the borrower results in a rating downgrade to below investment grade. Restricted payments. The covenant protects lenders by limiting the amount of cash that may be paid to equity holders. Limitations on liens. The covenant limits the amount of secured debt that a borrower can carry. Unsecured debt holders prefer the issuer to have less secured debt, which increases the recovery amount available to them in the event of default. Restricted versus unrestricted subsidiaries. Issuers can classify subsidiaries as restricted or unrestricted. Restricted subsidiaries' cash flows and assets can be used to service the debt of the parent holding company. This benefits creditors of holding companies because their debt is pari passu with the debt of restricted subsidiaries, rather than structurally subordinated. Restricted subsidiaries are typically the holding company's larger subsidiaries that have significant assets. Tax and regulatory issues can factor into the classification of subsidiaries' restriction status. subsidiary's restriction status is found in the bond indenture. Bank covenants are often more restrictive than bond covenants, and when covenants are violated, banks can block additional loans until the violation is corrected. If a violation is not remedied, banks can trigger a default by accelerating the full repayment of a loan. In terms of the factors that affect their return, high-yield bonds may be viewed as a hybrid of investment-grade bonds and equity. Compared to investment-grade bonds, high-yield bonds show greater price and spread volatility and are more highly correlated with the equity market. High-yield analysis can include some of the same techniques as equity market analysis, such as enterprise value. Enterprise value is equity market capitalization plus total debt minus excess cash. For high-yield companies that are not publicly traded, comparable public company equity data can be used to estimate enterprise value. Enterprise value analysis can indicate a firm's potential for additional leverage or the potential credit damage that might result from a leveraged buyout. An analyst can compare firms based on the differences between the enterprise value to EBITDA and debt to EBITDA ratios. Firms with a wider difference between these ratios have greater equity relative to their debt and therefore have less credit risk. Next, we will discuss credit considerations for sovereign issuers. Sovereign debt is issued by national governments. Sovereign credit analysis must assess both the government's ability to service debt and its willingness to do so. The assessment of willingness is important because bondholders usually have no legal recourse if a national government refuses to pay its debts. A basic framework for evaluating and assigning a credit rating to sovereign debt includes five key areas. Institutional effectiveness includes successful policymaking, absence of corruption, and commitment to honor debts. Economic prospects include growth trends, demographics, income per capita, and size of government relative to the private economy. International investment position includes the country's foreign reserves, its external debt, and the status of its currency in international markets. Fiscal flexibility includes the government's willingness and ability to increase revenue or cut expenditures to ensure debt service, as well as trends in debt as a percentage of GDP. Monetary flexibility includes the credibility and effectiveness of monetary policy and the ability to use monetary policy for domestic economic objectives. This might be lacking if a central bank uses exchange rate targeting or if the country is a member of a monetary union. Credit rating agencies assign each national government two ratings, a local currency debt rating and a foreign currency debt rating. The ratings are assigned separately because defaults on foreign currency denominated debt have historically exceeded those on local currency debt. Foreign currency debt typically has a higher default rate and a lower credit rating because the government must purchase foreign currency in the open market to make interest and principal payments, which exposes it to the risk of significant local currency depreciation. In contrast, local currency debt can be repaid by raising taxes, controlling domestic spending, or simply printing more money. Ratings can differ as much as two notches for local and foreign currency bonds. Sovereign defaults can be caused by events such as war, political instability, severe devaluation of the currency, or large declines in the prices of the country's export commodities. Access to debt markets can be difficult for sovereigns in bad economic times. We will complete this topic review with a discussion of credit considerations for non-sovereign government bonds. Non-sovereign government debt is issued by local governments, such as cities, states, and counties, and quasi-governmental entities. Municipal bonds are a significant part of the overall U.S. bond market. Interest payments from municipal bonds are most often exempt from national income taxes. default rates for municipal bonds are very low relative to general corporate bonds. Most municipal bonds can be classified as general obligation bonds or revenue bonds. General obligation bonds are unsecured bonds backed by the full faith and credit of the issuing governmental entity, which is to say, they are supported by its taxing power. Revenue bonds are issued to finance specific projects, such as airports, toll bridges, hospitals, and power generation facilities. Unlike sovereigns, municipalities cannot use monetary policy to service their debt and usually must balance their operating budgets. Municipal government's ability to service their general obligation debt depends ultimately on the local economy, which is to say the tax base. Economic factors to assess in evaluating the creditworthiness of general obligation bonds include employment, trends in per capita income and per capita debt, tax base depth, breadth, and stability, demographics, and ability to attract new jobs. Credit analysts must also observe revenue variability through economic cycles. Relying on highly variable taxes that are subject to economic cycles, such as capital gains and sales taxes, can signal higher credit risk. Municipalities may have long-term obligations, such as underfunded pensions and post-retirement benefits. Inconsistent reporting requirements for municipalities are also an issue. Revenue bonds often have higher credit risk than general obligation bonds because the project is the sole source of funds to service the debt. Analysis of revenue bonds combines analysis of the project, using techniques similar to those for analyzing corporate bonds, with analysis of the financing of the project.